So I'd invite you to open your Bibles with me and just look together at a short little section of the verses for Ash Wednesday for the gospel. The whole of the gospel for Ash Wednesday, of course, is taking on for some people the disciplines of some is denial. I've heard others say, you know, maybe what would be better is if we add for the disciplines, like adding Bible reading, adding morning devotion or something like that. Robin has added, my wife who serves up that effort, this is a good one. She has, they've taken on adding for this week, not looking in a mirror. And she's found that to be really hard because there's like, you don't know it, but there's mirrors all over. And, so, you know, you're looking in, if you're adjusting your car's rearview mirror. So she's like, oh, I have caught her several times, like, oh, it's like she's a vampire or something, trying not to see herself. So most of the time we think of Lent and Ash Wednesday in particular of the time of undertaking some sort of discipline like that. But in this section, I decided just to focus on this particular little section where Jesus is looking at just one of the disciplines from chapter 6, verse 19 to 21 of Matthew. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but rather store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust cannot destroy, and where thieves cannot break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." This is the reading of God's holy word for us. Thanks be to God. As I was reading it, I thought, you know, what Jesus is really telling us about is, well, first of all, what our priorities are in life. You know, put our priorities in the right place. Put God first and other things, you know, they'll fall into place if we put God first. And he's talking, therefore, about investing in eternity in this particular section. And so I thought, I've been reading a biography of Abraham Lincoln, and it's just named Abe. That's the whole title. It's interesting. I got to the point where the war, Civil War, has started. And, you know, bribery in the first days of the war especially, bribery and what's called shoddy were two words that went hand in hand with the Civil War. Merchants, they saw the cash registers ringing as the Union prepared for the war. And they knew that there was going to be some way or other, to make a profit, a quick profit from it. Each man needed uniform. Each man needed weapons. Each man needed food. You know, there's an old saying that an army marches on its belly. The rate of the early buildup, David Reynolds, who wrote this biography, said was nearly 10 times, get this, I couldn't believe it, 10 times as rapid, he said, as that in the opening months of World War I. And our army in World War I was smaller than that of, I think it was Venezuela. And it was four times faster, he says, than in the year leading up to World War II. So, in other words, 1940. The Union, in the years before 1861, when the war began, was completely unprepared for any war, much less the secession of half of our country. And so, likewise, there were profiteers who looked to make for the Union, as well as profiteers in the Confederacy, looked to make not the best, but the worst they could supply, and hope to not be caught. Many recruits went into the Civil War with no rifles, but had to learn to drill and drill and drill, they did, because they had no rifles, with wooden toy substitutes. Can you imagine that? Signing up for the war, as Lincoln called people, you know, he called for, I think it was 15,000. That's what he thought was going to be enough. 15,000 to sign up for the Civil War. In the earliest days, I think it was within a month, more than 85,000 men had signed up. And you might know that by the end, well over a million, in fact, it was somewhere close to 2 million men signed up for the Civil War, either signed up voluntarily or were drafted into the war. Famous riot in New York was, New York City, was because of the draft. The Irishmen, I don't know, who's Irish among us out here? Okay, the Irishmen were the ones who particularly didn't want to be drafted into the war in that New York City draft. You know, it was John Brown. Anybody recall John Brown, the name John Brown? He led that in the 1850s, I think it was 1858, mini rebellion. He was trying to free the slaves. He thought that if he just gave them rifles, then there would be a slave uprising. And so he went down to Harper's Ferry after the massacre up in Kansas, Bleeding Kansas, as it was called. He went to Harper's Ferry at that junction between Virginia and Maryland, across the Potomac. He went there for the sole purpose of gaining the rifles which were stored in the armory at Harper's Ferry. And as it was repelled, this effort by John Brown, the South and most of the officers and men who went responded to the rebellion by John Brown were from the South. And so where do you guess those rifles went? They all went to the South, Southern forts. And that's why the North was so unprepared. All the rifles were down South. And the North was left with trying to manage with wooden toy rifles. The Henry Gun Works over here in Jacobsburg State Park, just outside of Nazareth, was among the many manufacturers of rifles which the Union called upon to make the rifles for the army. the Army of the Potomac, as it was called. But some of these manufacturers of the rifles, they produced weapons which were so poor in quality that they would blow up. The barrel would blow up when they had loaded the weapon, or the stock would fall off as it were being carried. And the uniform clothing, this is what struck me as interesting, is the uniforms and rations were about the most lucrative ways for a company to make money off of the government. And the very word shoddy, became a synonym for what was issued for the men to wear. Shoddy, it turns out, was a type of cloth that cloth weavers sort of cobbled together out of the sweepings that were on the floor. You know how when you weave material together like cotton or wool, they make a cut in order to make the cloth square. And that cut left all these pieces of unused cloth on the floor. So what was done with it is they would grind it up and put it in a slurry of glue. And then as they pressed it together into the shape of more cloth, it was called shoddy, which became, of course, a synonym for crappy material. Let's just put it that way. I mean, men would march and their very sweat would cause the uniform to fall off of them, much less when it rained. Can you imagine the type of graft that would produce as a synonym for the war, shoddy? The rations were just as bad. Some canners of what was supposed to be bully beef, you might have heard that term, canned beef, was basically picked up from the bloody floors of the stockyard butchering plants, and then canned. Soldiers would open up their cans to find more gelatin than meat. And what was in that whole fetid, inedible mess just had to be thrown away because it was just utterly inedible. You know, this, by the way, was equally true of World War I. And, of course, by World War II, anybody remember what occurred by the time we got to World War II? Anybody who, there's so many men I've talked to over the years who hate Spam. Because Spam was the result of World War II. I like Spam. Anybody like Spam out there? Spam and syrup, if you ask me, that's a perfect, along with eggs, of course, is a perfect breakfast. We'll have that at my home every once in a while. The rest of my family aren't very much Spam eaters. But yeah, so there was the food, the uniforms, the weapons, all these things. Various companies found ways to basically cheat the government and as a result endanger the results of the Civil War itself. We can think of this when we consider what Jesus said in these verses of Matthew's. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, You know, that's what these manufacturers of the shoddy were trying to do. But moth and vermin, as one translation puts it, can destroy these. And where thieves can break in and steal, don't store up there either. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Those manufacturers, their hearts were not with the men on the field, were they? Much less the union itself. They just were looking for the quick buck. Rather than giving the shoddy leftovers, Jesus is saying here, of our lives, what will cost us, you know, virtually nothing except words. Rather than giving that to God, Jesus is telling us that we should give of ourselves now. Because we're laying up, and when we do, even more in the storehouses of heaven. When we set that tithe of our time, our talent, our treasure, our vows to be faithful in our prayers, our presence, our gifts, our service, our witness, when we live out those vows and make God our priority, Jesus says that God, in a sense, sees these acts of faithfulness and love for Him. In the here and now, He sees that we've determined to make Him a priority. And how does He say it? Jesus elsewhere says, "And all the other things then will be added unto you as well." He knows what our needs are. He knows. And so all those things, if we make God our priority, shall be then added unto us, given to us by grace. And if we do, it will impact our entire lives. And the here and now, because of the pleasure it brings to live for God and His glory. And in the future, because it's laid up for us a treasure in heaven where nothing can destroy it. As the old song goes, give of your best to the Master.